Hello, I am Alicia Welch. This is number 0322, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0322. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Jason Hansen, author of Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life. In addition to the book, he teaches courses that can help you to avoid being kidnapped.
My business does keep getting busier and busier and every year. And the funny thing is, when I first started doing this, I was dealing mostly with corporations, which I still do. But over the years, more and more civilians are taking my training. And obviously, none of us wants to get kidnapped or have a home invasion or carjacking. So all of us want to be safe.
Actor Brent Bailey, who plays JFK political advisor and speechwriter Ted Sorensen in the all-star Rob Reiner-directed biopic LBJ. Is it daunting playing a real person from the not-too-distant past?
It's definitely more stressful than the alternative, because you do have people that are going to watch this and analyze it and say, you know, he was or wasn't the way that you're playing him. But at the same time, the other great thing about playing somebody that actually existed in real life is you can go back and, you know, Ted's written a couple books. He also has done just tons and tons of interviews that are all available on YouTube. And then you can kind of get an idea of who he was and what he was about, which gives you a lot of information to help bring the full character to life.
Dominic DC, author of You're a Vampire, That Sucks, a survival guide. What makes him a vampire expert?
What makes me a vampire expert is that I am just a huge geek, and I actually enjoy research. I enjoy learning about the history of things. And so, of course, I love Hollywood vampires, but it's not good enough for me. I actually have to know the history of vampires before even Bram Stoker got his hand on the legend.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0322 was Alicia Welch, a freelance writer in Vermont. She's also the mother of 7-year-old Alex and the wife of a broadcaster, some guy named Bob. Anyway, thank you very much, Alicia, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Target, or as we like to sometimes call it, Target, if we're thinking upscale, has some explaining to do after some San Jose shoppers got a shocking and disturbing surprise at the Westgate Mall. Shoppers say they heard something over the intercom that sounded like porn. I felt violated. My body said, wait a minute, this isn't right. So I was uneasy, said shopper Chris Miner. So were a lot of other shoppers, including mothers with babies. The customer who shot the 3.5-minute video says sexually explicit moans and groans were bad enough. There was profanity, too. Miner says the store apologized over the PA, and then it started again. Thought it may have been Halloween-related, maybe an employee playing games, but this was rated X material, which made me feel very uncomfortable. I was taken aback, appalled, and very frustrated, Miner said. A statement from Target said in part, we are actively reviewing the situation with a team to better understand what happened and to help ensure this doesn't happen again. Miner says Target should have had more safeguards. He says the manager apologized to him. To me, that's not enough. That's too egregious of an event to have people experience, especially your regular shoppers, Miner said. So, are you saying it's okay to experience it if you're a casual shopper? Yeah. Anyway, Target says it can't go into specifics because it's an investigation that's ongoing. Okay, not that this isn't a serious issue, but for a shopper to say that Target needs more safeguards is a little ridiculous. I mean, it's not like the store's PA system is on DEFCON 1. I'm sure there will be an investigation. Either some kid in the back room will be fired for pulling the prank, or they'll discover that their PA system is just as hackable as a baby monitor and they'll have to fix the situation. Either way, there is a big, big difference between hearing porn and seeing porn. So lighten up, Chris Miner. In the grand scheme of things, this is really a minor matter. Anyway. Moving on, as you know, Florida is a state fraught with wackiness. Here is the latest. A 54-year-old Florida man was arrested this week on charges of driving under the influence and obstructing traffic while in his motorized wheelchair. Police say Ronnie Scott Hicks of Palm Bay, Florida, who was held on a $5,000 bond, was riding in his motorized wheelchair when they received a call reporting an intoxicated man obstructing traffic on a bridge. When Palm Bay Police Department officials arrived late Monday night, they said they smelled an odor coming from Hicks and he was slurring his words. He did not follow police instructions and refused to take a breathalyzer test. Hicks was charged with felony DUI, his third violation in 3 years. Once in custody, he also refused treatment for an open wound. Hicks has two prior convictions for DUI, including in 2013 and 1998. It wasn't immediately clear whether those other offenses were committed in a car or in a wheelchair. According to the Brevard County Sheriff's Office, Hicks was arrested earlier this year on a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon without the intent to kill. Well, at least he wasn't intending to kill. Isn't that nice? Talk about being hell on wheels. This guy is definitely a piece of work. Okay, natural selection narrowly avoided improving the gene pool recently when a Missouri man attempted to put out the garbage fire with a truck full of ammunition. The man was burning trash on his property in Clay County when the fire began burning out of control. The man drove his truck back and forth over the fire in an attempt to suffocate it. However, the tires of the van caught fire, which quickly spread to the west of the van, which, as you heard I said earlier, was loaded with ammunition. Yes. Why was it loaded with ammunition? Well, if you live in Missouri, you already know the answer to that question. The man managed to run away from the burning van before it exploded. A police officer who was in the middle of a traffic stop in the area saw the black smoke and went to investigate. The officer eventually found the vehicle's owner watching the fire from a distance. The car owner will not face charges as the fire occurred on his own property and he only damaged his own vehicle. Well, that's what you call a Darwin starter kit story, because someone capable of this kind of thinking and who has enough ammunition to make Wile E. Coyote envious will eventually find a way to remove themselves from the planet. And speaking of Darwin starter kit material, police in Tulsa, Oklahoma were called to a residence at 3:25 a.m. on the report of an injury. An officer found a 16-year-old boy who had accidentally shot himself in the leg with a pistol. Only that officer's quick action in applying a tourniquet prevented the boy from bleeding to death. The unnamed boy was hospitalized in serious condition. Now, 3 months before, officers had responded to the same house for the same reason, involving the same boy who apparently shot himself in the same leg. But it wasn't the same pistol. That one was confiscated by police and was still locked away. Well, as Charles Darwin might say, the third time is always the charm. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we have a couple of stories that deal with people who definitely have some issues. Number one, Miami-Dade, Florida police arrested 52-year-old Eddie Juan 2 weeks ago after someone matching his description was reported at a library at Florida International University crawling under tables and sniffing women's feet. He was charged with violating a previous sex offender registration order. Ooh. And number two, in what was originally a domestic disturbance case, Britain's Cambridge Magistrates Court handed 45-year-old Nelson Nazare a 6-week suspended sentence in September. for the photo on his C's cell phone of a man having sex with a large fish, plus two woman dog sex photos. Okay. Has anybody thought to find the women in the picture? And also, assuming the guy with the fish isn't Nelson, are they looking for him too? Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff All program, shall we? Former CIA officer Jason Hansen is the author of Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life, a book that shares techniques on what you need to know to keep your family protected. You might also remember him as one of the successful entrepreneurs who got a deal on ABC's Shark Tank. Jason joins us on the line via Skype from Utah. Hi, Jason.
How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. I actually saw when you were on Shark Tank, and the thing that impressed me the most, first of all, was the poise you had in making your presentation on Shark Tank, because that's something that you don't always see on that show. You sounded like you were like one of the greatest professors you'd ever see in school, explaining things to their students. You were very, very good at what you did.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, I must say it was because of the amount of research I did and the amount of preparation that I did.
Yeah. Is the business that you're in, is this really one for the times? And by that I mean, you know, we're seeing a lot of scary stuff in the news these days. And you come along with what you're offering, and it seems like it's something that's really needed.
It is. I mean, my business does keep getting busier and busier and every year. And the funny thing is, when I first started doing this, I was dealing mostly with corporations, which I still do. But over the years, more and more civilians are taking my training. And obviously, none of us wants to get kidnapped or have a home invasion or carjacking. So all of us want to be safe.
But generally speaking, statistically speaking, what are the chances of that happening? I mean, is there a certain amount of fear? I wouldn't say fear mongering. I don't want to use that term. But is the general population, and by part of it, us in the media, are we playing up the idea that we're not as safe as we think we are?
Well, we are not as safe as we think we are. But as you said, obviously, it is a very small percentage. You know, I don't know the exact percentages of home invasions or carjackings. But here's the thing. The training that I do and what I do for my own family, it gives me peace of mind. So tell the guy who has the home invasion what the percentages are, and he doesn't care because some bad guy's in his house trying to kill him. So it doesn't matter what it is it has to happen, or it does happen to everyone, you know, all over this world every day.
Is part of the problem not necessarily what to do when you're the subject of a home invasion, but making your house look less attractive to someone who wants to be a home invader? In other words, are we being lax in the first step ourselves?
You're 100% right. So what I recommend people do is to go walk their neighborhoods and kind of case their own house. So say if I was a burglar and I'm walking down my neighborhood, which house would I choose to invade? And obviously, if you choose yours, you need to do some things. And the actions you want to take are incredibly simple. It's putting alarm signs in your front yard, putting alarm sign stickers on your windows, putting motion detector lights, and putting some video surveillance cameras, which are very inexpensive these days. So when I did this to my own neighborhood, there was only one other person that showed any security measures at all. So most people, probably 90% of America, have none of these security measures, which is why if you do it, the criminal is going to choose their house instead of yours.
One of the other things that concerns me is, I mean, with all the steps and tips that you give in your book, Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life, is there ever a concern, and by the way, the subtitle is A Former CIA Officer Reveals Safety and Survival Techniques to Keep You and Your Family Protected. Is there any concern about your book being a criminal's how-to book?
You know, that doesn't concern me at all. I think 98% of people are good, honest Americans and, you know, good, honest people all over the world. And as you know, people train in karate. So people take karate. You know, should we stop doing karate? So every once in a while, I'll get somebody who tries to come through my training and I can tell something's not right and I just put them on the ban list and I don't allow them in. But that is very, very small. The thousands of people I've trained is probably five most. So, you know, I think, again, most people are good, so I don't worry about it.
Now, you're a former CIA officer, and I'm just wondering, was there an aha moment for you? And I'll give you an analogy. There are television shows out there like, for instance, CIS Cyber. And you see things on that show, and suddenly people, and I've talked to people, by the way, who work on that show, and they say they're very skittish about the idea of what can happen with your computer because they work on a show that talks about the breakdown of cyber integrity. When you were in the CIA, did you look around and go, my gosh, we're not really protected as a society?
Well, I did it when I worked for the agency, and I still do it today. So most people, you know, they'll go to an internet cafe like a Starbucks and they'll log onto the wireless without any protection on their computers. And it's so easy for thieves to steal your passwords, get into your banking, and have your whole identity stolen. So at the very least, I recommend people get a VPN, which is a virtual private network, and they're very inexpensive. Just Google it. It'll tell you everything you want to know. And when you surf the internet, it's encrypted. That way you don't have to worry about these thieves stealing your identity.
Okay, let's talk about some of the tips you talk about in your book. And some of the things, I mean, we touched on kidnapping. But let's talk about, what do you do if you think someone is following you?
Sure. So you do the exact opposite of what Hollywood tells you. So Hollywood, you've always got that woman and her head is down and she sees the guy following her and she looks very sheepishly and walks faster and she looks like a weak victim. And that's what you don't want, because most crimes are crimes of opportunity. So if you ever think you're being followed, you want to make eye contact. You want to turn around and say something like, can I help you? Do you need something? So I realize it's socially uncomfortable. But if that criminal following you realizes, whoa, this person has confidence, they made me, I'm going to go choose somebody else who's staring at their cell phone and never is going to see me coming in a million years.
So you're assuming that in most cases that when you're talking about these situations, it's a crime of opportunity and not a situation where someone is naturally being targeted, correct?
That's correct. So obviously, if you're a celebrity or a politician or you've had death threats, then yes, you could be targeted. But for the average person, the average Joe, when you're coming out of Walmart or coming out of the movie theater, it's just a crime of opportunity. It's some crackhead looking for the person to rob to buy his next drug fix.
One of the other things you also talk about is how to disappear off the grid. And I'm just wondering why or what situations would someone want to legally disappear off the grid?
That is a great question. So a lot of people ask me about this and I tell them, it is incredibly difficult to do, and you wouldn't do it unless you had a serious threat. So I deal with a lot of women who are unfortunately victims of domestic violence. So they're trying to get away from abusive husbands. So I run them through the whole process and help them disappear. But for you and me and the average person, you wouldn't want to do it because you got to leave everything behind. You're not going to see your family. You're not going to get on the internet again. And it's a very mentally tough process.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to ask, too, is, I said I saw you on Shark Tank, and how have things changed since you hooked up with Damon?
It has been an amazing blessing. So, obviously, the business has grown leaps and bounds, and the book that we're kind of talking about, my book, Spy Secrets Can Save Your Life, Damon got me that book deal, so I wouldn't have that without him. So, I have nothing but good things to say, and it's been amazing.
If I recall, because I saw the show when you were on, one of the things some of the sharks mentioned, and I can't remember if it was Damon specifically or some of the others, but they talked about, because you came there talking about your camp, right?
That is correct, my 320-acre property.
One of the things they talked about was getting to the word out as to what people need to know for their safety. So I'm assuming that this book is all part of some of the ideas that were generated by you being on that show to talk about your niche and why it is important to the general population, not just a fun place to go and learn some new techniques in Utah.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, now we have the 320-acre property. I do a lot of training. It's going very well. And so, of course, everyone loves it now because it's making money. So I think what you didn't see on Shark Tank, because I was in there maybe 10 minutes on the TV, but in real life, I was in there about 55 minutes. And so I explained to them that, you know, this is going to be for the serious person. I don't expect to get 20,000 people a year through there. This is for the person who truly values their safety. And now they see it. Now it's doing very well.
What are the kinds of clientele, if you can tell us the kind of kinds of clientele? Are they people who are working security for people who are in the public eye? Are there people in the public eye themselves? Are there, you know, athletes and CEOs and actors and things of that nature? Or even foreign nationals who need to protect their own individuals in another land?
You know, it's everything you just said is the above. So, of course, I have the celebrities, I have the executives, I have the protection specialists. But a lot of it is your everyday next door neighbor. I mean, it's the average person, whether it's an accountant, a soccer mom, it doesn't matter, an IT guy, and they just want to feel safer too. So I do have that high end clientele, but probably the other half of my business is the everyday person who just wants to feel safer.
Are we living in a world that is somewhat too paranoid, or is it just the right amount of level of paranoid?
Well, obviously, because of what I do, I feel it's the right amount, a level of paranoid, because as I said at the very beginning of this, it gives me peace of mind. So I don't walk around like a crazy person with my gun out and my head on a swivel like I'm a nutso. Is I sleep very well at night. I walk down the street, walk down the street very well at night because I am prepared to deal if, heaven forbid, something happens.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is spyescape.com. And the book, again, is Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life. A former CIA officer reveals safety and survival techniques to keep you and your family protected. Jason, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. You, again, have certainly found your niche in the world. And kudos to you for turning something like this into what has now become a thriving business.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Jason Hansen, author of Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0322, and you'll find links to Jason's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to actor Brent Bailey. Plus, we'll meet Dominic Deasy, who is the author of You're a Vampire, That Sucks, A Survival Guide. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on. And, of course, more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Well, 33-year-old Christopher Hiscock got only a year's probation after his guilty plea for trespassing on a ranch in Kamloops, British Columbia. This was back in September, because it was a trespass with panache. Since no one was home, Hiscock fed the cats, prepared a meal,
shaved and showered, took meat out of the freezer to thaw, made some coffee, started a fire in the fireplace, did some laundry, put out hay for the horses, and even wrote some touchingly personal notes in the resident's diary, such as, "Today was my first full day at the ranch. I have to remind myself to just relax and take my time." In court, he apologized. He said, "I made a lot of mistakes. Beautiful ranch. Gorgeous. I was driving by and I just turned in. Beautiful place." Yes, welcome to Canada, folks, where even our criminals are courteous. They clean up after themselves and leave you thank you notes. Okay, because life in the first world isn't easy enough, here are a few low-benefit but internet-connected devices now on sale. This is from a recent issue of MacLife magazine. The Happy Fork. It's a Bluetooth-connected fork that alerts you if you're eating too fast. Seriously. The Eye Kettle. Heat water at different temperatures for different drinks controlled by phone. An LG washing machine that lets you start washing while you're away, provided, of course, that you've already loaded the washer. The Colibri smart toothbrush, which tracks and graphs brushing habits. Also highlighted was the Satis smart toilet, which remotely flushes, raises and lowers the seat, and engages the bidet, features that MacLife touts mainly as good for terrorizing guests. You know, as we continue down the road to an extremely soft life, we will become completely complacent and numb when the invasion begins. I'm just saying. 35-year-old Angela K. Kipp had her car in reverse. She was leaving her driveway in Syracuse, Indiana, with her son in the back seat when she noticed a spider on her shoulder and, according to the county sheriff's office, got the hell out of that Dodge. Her son climbed into the front seat to stop the car, but being only 9 and ineligible for driver's ed, hit the wrong pedal. The car accelerated into a school bus. Authorities found the boy, his head somewhat injured, lying outside the car. He was sent to a hospital. He's still a better driver than his mother. I'm also assuming that when he was a toddler, she didn't sing the Itsy Bitsy Spider to him. Well, a new group of applicants for the police academy in El Paso, Texas, arrived at police headquarters for their physical agility tests. One of the police officers at the station recognized one of the applicants but couldn't quite place him, and he noticed the man was avoiding eye contact with him. Well, the applicants hadn't gone through criminal background checks yet, so the unnamed officer pulled the file on Antonio Tony Sanchez Jr., age 36, and checked him out. Sure enough, Sanchez had a 17-year-old warrant out for his arrest. He fled charges of organized criminal activity in the gang beating of another man that was so severe the man died several days later. Sanchez was arrested and held on $25,000 bond. Well, you know, if he was such a good prospect as a police officer, he would be able to read himself his rights and also roll his own fingerprints. Sort of a self-service arrest, if you know what I mean. Okay, we often share ignorant stories of zero tolerance on this show, and this time around we have one from right here in our own backyard. Yann Marcotte has gone swimming at the municipal pool in Saint-Julie, Quebec for 12 years. But this year, the pool changed its rules. Everyone has to wear a swimming cap, even if they don't have long hair. "When I swim with a cap on, it's very, very hot," he complains. "It's very uncomfortable." So he refused to wear one. But it's not the law, it's just a pool rule. And he added, when they called the police on him, "I'm not a criminal," he said, and he complained to the city's recreation board, but when they turned down his appeal, he stopped swimming at the pool. He refuses to wear a cap for a very good reason. He's completely bald. Not partially bald, we're talking cue ball bald. And they refuse to make an exception for a very good reason on their own. They're morons, apparently. Anyway. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 51-year-old Hayden Vanderveer admits he stole his ex-boss's truck and a $60,000 trailer and drove them into a Columbia, Tennessee creek. It made me feel great because I know it will hurt him, he said. He'll come in the next day and his little baby ain't sitting there, and it is 4 foot in a creek. Vanderveer said he quit his job over a year ago. Boy, he can hold a grudge, can't he? And didn't like the way his boss treated his employees. His boss says he fired Vanderveer because he used the company credit card for personal purchases. I hate people who disrespect their employees, and all they care about is whether they are going to work for them, Vanderveer said, noting that he was on drugs when he stole the truck. He also said he planned to get caught so that he would be jailed and forced to leave his wife. She's having a bad time right now. She knows I did this to get away from her, he said. Vanderveer faces multiple charges, including burglary, vandalism, and driving under the influence. Wow, jail. When you really need to get away from it all. Yeah. I mean, seriously, how much of a passive-aggressive weenie is this guy anyway? On the other hand, how bad is his wife that he thinks jail is a better alternative? Think about that. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? An all-star cast has been assembled for director Rob Reiner's biopic, LBJ, that looks at the presidency of America's 36th Commander-in-Chief. Woody Harrelson stars as Lyndon Johnson, along with Richard Jenkins, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Bill Pullman. Also in the film is Brent Bailey, who plays JFK's political advisor and speechwriter, Ted Sorensen. Brent joins us on the line right now from New Orleans, where LBJ is currently shooting. Hi, Brent.
Hello. What a man. What a fantastic intro.
You're welcome.
I loved it.
You're welcome. So now that you are in New Orleans actually working on LBJ, I mean, right now you're talking to us, but how do you keep out of trouble once the shooting stops?
You know, you just try to stay in your hotel room as much as possible, but that's also really difficult to do because I've already been here for 2 weeks. I've got 3 more weeks here, so you start to feel real cooped up. I just try to avoid the casinos as much as possible.
Now, you're playing an actual person. You're playing Ted Sorensen, who, as I mentioned, was JFK's political advisor and speechwriter. So is there any daunting fact to the idea that you're playing someone who actually existed? I know Ted Sorensen passed away about 5 years ago, but he still has family. Is it daunting to play an actual character?
You know, it's definitely more stressful than like the alternative, because you do have people that are going to watch this and analyze it and say, you know, he was or wasn't the way that you're playing him. But at the same time, the other great thing about playing somebody that actually existed in real life is you can go back and, you know, Ted's written a couple books. He also has done just tons and tons of interviews that are all available on YouTube. And then you can kind of get an idea of who he was and what he was about, which gives you a lot of information to help bring the full character to life.
Have you had a chance to talk to any of his family?
No, I didn't. I went and I found his daughter on Twitter, and I started following her, and I was about to reach out, and it was one of those things where I just wasn't 100% sure, you know, if she would be excited to hear that I was playing her father, or if she would not be excited. I figured there was so much resources available, or so many resources available to me with the internet, that I didn't know if I necessarily wanted to bother her.
How did the part come your way?
Actually, my really, really good friend Jeremy Gordon was a casting associate for Jane Jenkins, and so he found out about the project, and my agents had submitted me on it, pitched me on it, and it just kind of was one of those beautiful coincidences where it was an easy room to get into. And so I went in, met with Jeremy and Jane. First audition went great. Second audition, I met up with Rob Reiner. And then just kind of went from there, booked the role way back in July, actually. And I wasn't allowed to talk about it for months until they finally announced it, I think technically 3 weeks ago.
Wow. Now, you mentioned Rob Reiner already. I mean, there's some heavyweight names attached to this film, including, as I mentioned, Woody Harrelson, who plays Lyndon Baines Johnson himself. What was it like getting into a situation where you're working with the likes of a Rob Reiner and a Woody Harrelson?
Oh, it's incredible. I was absolutely terrified when I found out Rob was going to be at the callbacks, but I walked in and he's just the most down-to-earth, extremely nice and generous guy. And so your fears and all of the nerves kind of just disappear because he's the easiest guy to work with. I mean, it's amazing. He's got so much experience and so much confidence that our days on set have been so simple. I almost feel like I'm jinxing it by saying it, but it's been probably one of the easiest projects I've worked on just because he knows exactly what he wants and he surrounded himself with a cast that knows how to give him what he wants.
Now, people might know you from the web series Emma Approved, which everybody, I guess, millennial and younger would know, because a lot of us older folks are not watching stuff online a lot. But that had a pretty good run.
It did. We shot 72 episodes over the period of a year. They're in talks about a season two right now, and we ended up winning an Emmy, which is amazing. The audience for web series, it's growing a lot, but right now it is the younger kids that are doing it. But it's funny, I mean, now that I've gotten involved in the world, I even have found myself going online and finding different web series and being like, oh, this is actually really interesting. So I think it's catching on more and more, and we'll just continue to go that way.
So you've done a web series. By the way, I caught your guest starring performance on Rizzoli and Isles, which is rather humorous. So you've done a network type show, and now you're on a major film directed, as we mentioned, by Rob Reiner. So you've covered the various levels of entertainment as far as platforms are concerned. Is it a different process? Is it a different way of doing things in the shooting process? Or is working in front of a camera just working in front of a camera and that's it?
You know, I think obviously each one has its differences. I mean, I've done, you know, like you said, commercials, web series, features, and now TV. And I've done indie features as well as the bigger budget features. And everything at the end of the day is pretty similar. You know, it's a crew, it's the cast, and it's just a bunch of people getting together trying to make something amazing. But I think you do notice a little bit of a difference in the web world. You shoot so incredibly fast. So with Emma Approved, we worked for one weekend a month. We shot 80 pages in 2 days. And so it was almost like a soap opera pace where it's just incredible amounts of dialogue. Whereas, you know, in a feature film, you shoot, you know, anywhere between like 5 and 8 pages. So it's a little bit slower paced. You're getting more camera angles. There's obviously a lot more production value, which means more shots and interesting shots like jib shots or, you know, just moving shots in general that take more time. So I guess in a way they're all the same, but at the same time, you can just tell little differences here and there with either production value or, you know, the cast that's involved. A lot of times on the big features have a lot more experience rather than like the people in the web world are not, not necessarily inexperienced, but just not at that level quite yet where they're seeing these insane budget movies getting put together.
So the guerrilla type shooting that you would do on a web series, the hurried pace, and the same thing as you say for a daytime soap opera, for instance, with the copious amounts of pages that you have to memorize as far as dialogue is concerned, does that all make it easier for you when you get to the somewhat leisurely pace of a feature film, or is it the old actor's adage of, you know, hurry up and wait?
No, it's much easier. Coming to set and knowing, like, I mean, this morning I only had 2 pages, and I was like, oh, gosh, like, this is amazing. This is so much simpler than walking on set and going, like, okay, I got 38 pages today. I'm pretty sure I've got all of them, but we'll see what happens. It's much less stressful, but at the same time, there is something weird and exciting about that stress of having 38 pages because it keeps you on your toes, and, you know, you got to be on your game, and you just kind of almost get more immersed in it because you're so overwhelmed with the amount of work that you've put in, whereas it is a little bit easier to walk in and kind of be relaxed, which I think could almost be a downfall from time to time.
Now, you grew up, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in Arizona?
Yeah. I was originally born in Tucson, lived there until I was 5, went to Texas for 5 years, and then came back to Arizona and pretty much grew up in Scottsdale.
Okay, so and you got a college degree, you got a master's in business. So how do you go from Arizona and a master's in business to acting?
It's such a depressing story. A girl broke my heart right when I was finishing with my master's program, and I was a computer programmer. I had a good little life set up, and I just, as soon as that happened, I needed a big change. My buddy Harley J was living out in California. He was an actor. He was on Broadway in Rent. And I said, like, hey, man, I'm coming to live on your couch. And so I moved over there. I lived on the couch for 6 months, actually, finally, after 6 months, I upgraded to the dining room. We put a little bed in the dining room. And then actually after a year, I finally got my first bedroom. So it was an interesting transition. I'd never even considered being an actor. But it just kind of, I came out here, I tried it a little bit, and then I realized how much I loved it and how exciting it was and how much I just, you know, had a better appreciation for my life, and then just kind of stuck with it, and it's been amazing.
So during those lean years, you know, where you took that, you know, complete left turn, what did your family say?
You know, my parents weren't very excited at the beginning. I mean, I was an overachiever in school, so I graduated with my master's when I was 21, and so my parents were super excited and so proud, and then all of a sudden when I came, I think it was like a month before I graduated with my master's, and I told them, I was like, hey, listen, I'm going to quit my job and I'm moving to California. And I think both of them just kind of looked at me like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? But then it was almost even more rewarding because then, you know, when I got my first commercial and when they saw me on TV, they were so excited and so proud. And so it almost came full circle and made it to where it was even better. Because now they, you know, when they are with their friends and all of a sudden they come on TV, it makes them feel amazing, which makes me feel amazing, makes the whole thing worthwhile. So now they're 100% on board. At the beginning, they were a bit skeptical.
So again, coming back full circle, talking about the movie LBJ, how many weeks are you going to be spending shooting this?
So total, I'm here for 5 weeks.
And do you get to spend a lot of downtime with the crew? Is there a bonding process with you and the rest of the cast?
Definitely the cast, yeah. I've been hanging out with Michael Mosley a lot. He was in Sirens, the TV show that went for 2 seasons. And then Michael Stahl David, who I know him best from Cloverfield. They're both great guys. I've been hanging out with them. And then there's Rich Summers, who just got done wrapping up Mad Men. And then we went out to dinner with Jeffrey Donovan. So, like, everybody's actually been extremely open. And, I mean, we're all kind of uplifted from our homes and here in New Orleans. So we've helped keep each other out of trouble by hanging out outside of work.
Well, congratulations on getting the part. When is the film wrapped, and when is it slated to be released?
It's supposed to be a 27-day shoot, so I think we were on day 13 today, so we got, you know, I guess that'll be 14 more days. That's right, 14 more days. And then apparently Rob is a master when it comes to editing, so I think it's going to be edited and kind of wrapped up and done by the end of this year, and then I would imagine it'll be packaged and get the PR ready and everything for a release next year, but they haven't set an official date.
Well, excellent. Brent, thank you very much for talking with us. Pleasure to have a chance to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Actor Brent Bailey, who currently is shooting the real-life role of JFK political advisor and speechwriter Ted Sorensen in director Rob Reiner's biopic LBJ. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0322, and you'll find links to Brent's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. There's something about seeing a pumpkin sail through the air at high speed and then explode in a gooey mess that just makes people smile. Our family's been launching pumpkins off a deck in our backyard after Halloween for years, but I recently found out that some folks in Delaware have taken pumpkin throwing to a whole new level. For nearly 30 years, teams of pumpkin hurlers have traveled there to compete in what is known as the World Championship Pumpkin Chunkin'. Using everything from slingshots and catapults to large pneumatic cannons, they shoot the pumpkins as far as they can. The event was even featured on the Discovery Channel's Mythbusters show. But it was canceled last year and won't be held again this year either. Why? A couple of years ago, a volunteer was injured in an ATV accident and filed a lawsuit. Now the farmer who hosted it won't let it return to his property. Let's be fair, it's not just pumpkin hurling contests that are vanishing because of lawsuits, but all kinds of popular activities. And that's a shame. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about vampires. Plus, of course, we do have an idiot of the day coming up a little later on. But right now, I've got one more short Stuff File news story to share with you before we get to our next guest. Two men with handguns walked through an open door of a Philadelphia home in July and demanded drugs and cash from the three women inside, threatening pistol whippings. According to a Philly.com report, a 55-year-old woman in the home immediately burst into loud prayer, causing the gunman to flee empty-handed. Yes, as I've often said on this program, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. Let's get to our next guest, shall we? Dominic Deasy is the author of You're a Vampire, That Sucks, A Survival Guide. It's a very important book that gives you tips to help you cope with your new nocturnal life. Dominic joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Dominic.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the program with us. What makes you, first of all, a vampire expert?
Well, what makes me a vampire expert is that I am just a huge geek. And I actually enjoy research. I enjoy learning about the history of things. And so, of course, I love Hollywood vampires, but it's not good enough for me. I actually have to know the history of vampires before even Bram Stoker got his hands on the legends.
Now, you know, people, when they think of vampires, they think of people that you like to watch on the screen, but you don't have a lot of empathy for. But here you are with this book that's actually a survival guide for them. So you're obviously on their side.
You know, yes, I am. Because the thing is, our understanding of vampires has evolved. And I think we can thank Anne Rice for that, where we see a more sophisticated vampire. You know, back in the day, you know, during oral history, vampires were just monsters. They weren't really understood. And then finally around Bram Stoker, we're seeing a more intellectual creature, but still these powerful monsters. And then finally we get the more complex intellectual creature who they're just here to survive. And unfortunately, humans happen to be on their menu. But, you know, cows are ours. That doesn't make us bad. It just means we're a different species. And, you know, being a vampire is tough. You know, you're in a human world. You live for centuries. And people think you're the monster when in reality, you were originally human.
Well, by the way,
trying to make do with the new world.
By the way, from a cow's point of view, yes, we are bad, but that's a whole other story. But you know, you say that vampires are not understood, but it sounds like, to a certain degree, vampires don't even understand themselves, which again is the necessity of your book, right?
Of course. You know, because again, all vampires start out as human, and then they go through this traumatic life experience where they're undead. They're no longer humans, and yet all their experiences in life are how to be human, and now they've got to survive this new lifestyle. And it's not their fair. Why should they suffer? And, you know, unfortunately, it's taken Count Dominic Deasy thousands of years, I mean hundreds, he's a little bashful about his age, to really understand how to be a vampire and live happily in the world. And most vampires don't make it that far. So it's important that, you know, this book helps those newbie vampires understand that they are wonderful, unique individuals.
So someone who's listening to this right now who may have just become a vampire, what's the first thing they need to know?
The first thing you need to know is throw out everything you've ever watched or read about vampires, because you're not going to last long. Vampires spread rumors throughout the centuries to help protect themselves through enmity. And, you know, you might think you're okay if you put on a little more sunscreen than usual, but you're still going to become toast if you go out in the sun.
Is there any particular blood type a vampire prefers?
You know, that's up to the individual. Count Dominic prefers a B positive. But it is great that as a vampire, you can tell the different types of blood that you're drinking. Some like O because of the universal appeal of it. Others like a more broader base like AB.
You know, when we think of vampires, the movies, the books, it's always the drinking of the blood kind of thing. But I mean, you know, man cannot live, or I guess maybe vampire cannot live on blood alone, I'm assuming. Is there a diet they consist of besides, you know, human blood?
Well, actually, they can survive off any form of blood, but human blood is the most nutritious. So your human blood would be your steak, your broccoli, your vegetables all rolled up into one. You know, then you go down to mammals, and you're still eating rather healthy blood, but you're not going to be in peak physical condition. And, you know, if you start eating amphibians and reptile blood, you know, you might as well be eating McDonald's every day.
You know, since you've written this book, You're a Vampire That Sucks, a survival guide, did you think at the time, you know, with bookstores still being out there, that the people who are most prone to needing this book might not like the bright lights of a bookstore? Or is everyone buying it online?
You know, most people are buying it online, and they're digital copies as well, so they never have to go out into the sun.
Excellent. What about navigating through the life of being a vampire? For instance, what powers do you gain by being a vampire?
Well, you know, there are a lot of vampire powers that a vampire can gain. All of the vampires increase in strength, speed, their five senses become more attuned, some sort of levitation, but the degree at which you can levitate will vary. And then there's actually individual powers that a vampire could or could may or may not get. So you may or may not have the ability to transform to an animal, or you may or may not get the ability to telepathy of reading minds.
Okay. So what's the, besides, you know, staying out of the sun, what's the downside of being a vampire?
You know, for me, it was garlic. I loved garlic to eat it. And to have to give up some of those human pleasures is very difficult. But really, with modern technology, being a vampire is really nice because things are open 24/7 now, thanks to lighting and electricity.
Yes, yes, you can.
Now is the time to be a vampire.
Do vampires work? And because you just brought the 24-hour aspect of it, I'm now trying to think if you know all the late staff at Kinko's are vampires or not.
Well, as luck would have it, there is a chapter in the book called Finances, Nest Egg for Eternity. And that chapter deals with not only your investments and how to survive, because, you know, back in the old days, we'd all have our trove of jewels and precious art that we could pawn off, but with currency, many vampires do need a job, and there are several jobs that are perfect for the vampire nightlife and our unique special skill set.
I'm thinking right now that a late night Uber driver would be great. I mean, the people you meet,
except for all the attention they're getting right now, they're all over the news. You got to keep low, and Uber is not low profile job right now.
So are you saying being a vampire is one step above being, say, for instance, in the witness protection program?
Oh, well, you know, you actually have to talk to the vampires who deal with witness protection because, unfortunately, as vampires who don't age, we need to change our identity every 10 years.
Interesting. Would it be, I mean, do you also have to move, I would assume, a lot?
Yes. In fact, this book is chock full of helpful tips and necessary information. You do need to move often, and you have to know where to move to and what to look out for because, you know, with our interconnected world of travel, you got to make sure you don't bump into somebody 30 years later who's going to recognize you.
Mm. Now, is there a large population of American vampires, or are they mostly of European stock?
Vampires originally were more European, but as we've traveled around the world, we've easily spread ourselves over our feeding ground. It's important not to be too dense in any one area.
And last but not least, you've written this book, You're a Vampire That Sucks, a survival guide. But as we do know, there are vampire hunters out there. Are you worried about this book getting in the wrong hands?
You know, what I love is that people will believe what they want to believe, and I think people prefer to go the route of the Winchester brothers and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where they think they can just, you know, go one-on-one and just fight a vampire and survive, and they're not going to really worry about the actual ways in which they would survive an attack with vampires.
The book is called You're a Vampire, That Sucks, a Survival Guide. Written by Dominic Deasy. You can check out the website, DominicDC.com, DominicDicce.com. And I'm assuming the book is also available in such places as Amazon.com, right?
Yes, that is correct. It's available at Amazon.com and your local bookstores as of October 13th.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dominic, for being on the program with us. Have a nice night.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Dominic Deci, author of You're a Vampire, That Sucks, A Survival Guide. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0322, and you'll find links to Dominic's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Of course, this comes from Florida. Authorities say an 18-year-old man drove a stolen car to police headquarters to pick up court papers about a previous auto theft he was involved in. Documents that were found in yet another stolen car. Carnell Eugene Butler now faces charges in three stolen car cases. St. Petersburg police say officers found a stolen Infiniti. Inside, they found Butler's documents related to a June auto theft arrest. Detectives contacted Butler, who arranged to pick them up. When he arrived at police headquarters, a detective arrested Butler and found keys to a Hyundai Sonata in his pocket. The car was located a block away. It, too, had been reported stolen. Now, why, oh why, would you show up at a police station to pick up documents that you would probably know you left in a previously stolen vehicle and drive there in yet another stolen vehicle? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0322. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0322. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.